So I want to begin today by reading you a passage from a recent Unitarian Universalist Association letter to the President of the United States, as well as heads of the House and the Senate, regarding our denomination's position on the Iran war. It begins as follows. When John Adams, defender of civil liberties, signer of the Declaration of Independence and the Treaty of Paris, author of the oldest continuously serving constitution in the world, founding father, first vice president of the United States, and second president of the United States, died 200 years ago, he did so as a Unitarian. The religious roots of Unitarian Universalism in this country are deep and long, and they have shaped how the United States thinks about itself, its democracy, its religious pluralism, and its sacred commitment to the idea that all people are created equal. Unitarians and Universalists signed the Declaration of Independence, supported the ratification of the US Constitution, where presidents and legislators, and they were the philosophers, thinkers, and poets that shaped our national identity. Since General George Washington signed the commission of Universalist Reverend John Murray to become a chaplain in the Continental Army in 1775, Universalists, Unitarians, and Unitarian Universalists have provided religious leadership, ethical advice, and spiritual care as military chaplains. Today, Unitarian Universalists are activists, policymakers, filmmakers, community leaders, and more. And throughout our history as a uniquely American faith tradition, we have advocated on behalf of religious liberty, protecting a pluralistic society, defending minority communities, and creating peace. So just let that land for a moment. The important role that Unitarians and Universalists have played in the last 250 years of our nation's history. So to learn this week that the Department of Defense had removed 180 separate religious affiliations from the US military's list of recognized religious affiliation codes, including Unitarian Universalists, humanists, and pagans, among many others, awoke a contrarian spirit in me. Whether that decision is temporary or permanent, and whether it gets broader application in our society remains to be seen, but when I read it, I felt concerned, and so I did some more research. So to give us an inside perspective and comfort us, a UU Army chaplain colleague wrote, "When a faith tradition disappears from an official list, people understandably hear a message that they've been made less visible, less understood, or less welcome. At the same time," he says, "I want to offer a word of reassurance. This change does not erase Unitarian Universalists from the military. It does not remove the constitutional rights of UU service members. Unitarian Universalists have served faithfully in uniform for generations, and we remain part of the religious landscape of the armed forces, whether or not a drop-down menu recognizes us by name. Our covenant, our theology, our conscience, and our service do not depend on an administrative code." So for now, he calls us not to be alarmed. But in case we are erased from wider recognition in the future, I'm encouraged by the boldness and steadfastness of our dissenting UU ancestors. And there have been many. and the courage that generations before us have shown to create and tend the flame of our faith. Because, my friends, we have something important to offer. Yes? But as I thought about it more, I realized the real question isn't whether the military recognizes us. The real question is whether we are clear why we exist. Whether we remember why generations before us built congregations like this one. And whether we can articulate why people continue to gather year after year, decade after decade, in living rooms, in people's houses, in church halls and sanctuaries around the world to practice our Unitarian Universalist faith. So, on this new member Sunday, I wanted to explore why Unitarian Universalism matters, and perhaps more specifically, why we gather each week. That's why I was interested to hear from Jill. And even why this small faith tradition matters enough for people to fight for its existence here and around the world. So let's reflect a moment. Why are you here this morning? What brings you back week after week when sleeping in is a lot easier? Brunch is tastier. Kids' soccer games are more stimulating. And the internet offers more information than any minister could ever hope to provide. So why gather at all? Well, part of the answer came to me during a recent time exploring Unitarianism in England. I visited a number of congregations, mostly housed in old meeting houses, because as a dissenting faith in the 1700s, it was too dangerous to build and meet in a church. Yet both then and now, small groups of people meet in these beautiful historic church homes that look like large houses, you would never know, as a cover for those heretical Unitarian congregations. As I visited these communities, some Sundays there were 5 people, some 15, and the largest I attended had around 45 people, which almost felt like a revival. And yet every week, whether there were 5 or 25, their doors opened faithfully to keep something important going. Someone unlocked the building, someone made tea, of course, tea. Someone brought flowers, someone lit a chalice, and someone made sure there was some kind of music and a message that would sustain its members. And often, that someone was one, or perhaps 2, dedicated volunteers. How lucky are we, right? By our standards, we look at these congregations and see a faith in decline and wonder why it's even worth continuing. Why gather and make so much effort every week, in and out, when almost no one shows up? But what I saw was devotion. I saw people showing up week after week for something that they believed mattered. And one of those people was someone we'll call Jane. Jane is 88 years old, petite with sparkling green eyes, and dealing with a number of health issues. Years ago, she studied theology and she served faithfully as a lay leader in the Church of England. But eventually, she found herself unable to remain in a tradition whose answers had become too narrow for her questions. So she turned to the Unitarians. And every Sunday, she shows up, no matter how she's feeling, because her congregation, this faith, is so important to her. She believes that this tiny gathering matters. And she doesn't come because the service is entertaining, or because there's great music, or because there are hundreds of people there, or even because it's convenient. At 88, with health challenges and limited mobility, almost nothing about it is convenient. Yet every week, she comes. And she comes because gathering with this community feeds something in her soul. And every week she chooses to tend a flame that she hopes will outlive her. Seeing her there one Sunday, I found myself unexpectedly emotional, because I realized that Jane wasn't simply attending a congregation. She was helping carry a tradition. She was helping ensure that future generations would still have a place where questions could be asked freely, where conscience was honored, where courage was nurtured, and where love was wider than doctrine. And that made me think of you all, because being away from Chalice helped me see our community more clearly and appreciate what we have here even more. I mean, this congregation is twice the size of the largest congregation in London in the UK. For 10 years, I've had the privilege of serving this congregation, and like most things we love, it's easy to take it for granted from time to time. Yet as I visited congregations that were struggling to survive, I found myself appreciating what we have here in a whole new way. And then, of course, there was that incredible welcome back, so you got me there. We have children running through our halls. We have music that lifts the spirit. We have enough people willing to volunteer, to serve, to lead, and to care for one another. We have newcomers still finding their way through our doors. We have people who show up when someone is ill, grieving, celebrating, or in need. We have people who lead justice efforts and put our faith into action. So what we have here, my friends, is precious. Of course, it's not perfect. No congregation, no human being is. But it's precious. Do you agree? Amen. And seeing how hard so many of you work to keep even, well, so many people work to keep even the smallest communities alive reminded me never, ever, to take this community for granted. And I hope you'll join me in that. So I found myself wondering, what does Jane know that so much of our culture has forgotten? I think Jane understands that human beings are not meant to do life alone, and that there's something deeper in life worth paying attention to. We are creatures of belonging. Before we are thinkers and voters or consumers or citizens, we are tribal beings. We long to know that we matter to someone, that someone would notice if we didn't show up, that our joys will be celebrated and our sorrows carried. In Buddhism, the word for this is Sangha, the community of practitioners who walk the path together. It's actually one of the three jewels of Buddhism, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And the teacher Thich Nhat Hanh wrote that the Sangha is not just a support group, it is the ground beneath your feet. Without it, even the most sincere spiritual practice can wither. So, my friends, we need each other not as a luxury, but as a condition for growth and transformation. And the research on loneliness, of course, tells us what our hearts already know, that most of us are starving for connection, particularly if we are not blessed with large families or expansive groups of friends around us. Church or a congregation at its best says, "You belong here." But belonging alone isn't enough. I mean, if it were, a bowling league would do, right? Or a book club, or a pickleball group. I know a lot of you are into pickleball. Or the local choir, not our choir, but another choir. What spiritual communities offer is something more, isn't it? So I want you to take a moment now to close your eyes and think of why you belong here. What matters to you here? Yes, attending for social reasons or our wonderful music program is important, but what are your deeper reasons for belonging to a spiritual community like this? How is your soul fed? So take a moment and then raise your hand if you want to share just briefly a few ideas, and I'll repeat what's said. Yes, Matt.
Growth, development, engagement.
Yes, Don.
Our values represent the future of mankind.
Oh, our values represent the future of mankind. Beautiful, Don. Would you like to just do the rest of the sermon? Gorgeous. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, Marcy.
This is a community where I find like-minded people.
This is where a community where you find like-minded people, and that feeds your soul. Lovely. Yes, Alex.
It grounds me to my meaning.
It grounds you to your meaning. Yes, beautiful. Thelma.
The continuing search for truth and meaning.
The continuing search for truth and meaning. And you've been doing that here for, what, 54 years or something? Incredible like that. Our longest term member here. And one more. Yeah, two more. Yes.
I think that it makes my feelings and my thoughts and my voice louder to be in a group like this.
It makes your feelings, your thoughts, and your voice louder to be in a group like this. Absolutely. We can do so much more together than we can alone. Yes.
And belonging.
Belonging. Yes. I can't wait for you to join us, too. Wonderful. Oh, one more. Claudia.
All of this gives me acceptance and great joy.
All of this gives you acceptance and great joy. Yes. Beautiful. Oh, and Melanie. Okay, one last one.
There's a flow of loving energy in this community that then we grow and can bring out into the world.
Beautiful. There's a flow of loving energy in this community that we can then grow and bring out into the world. That's basically the sermon right there in one sentence. Thank you. Thank you. And I look forward to you all maybe discussing that over coffee hour a little bit before our annual meeting, just to hear more of your ideas. And I'd love to hear more too. You can drop me an email if you want. I also think spiritual communities matter because they help us wrestle with life's biggest questions, right? Who am I? Why am I here? How shall I live? What matters most? How do I face suffering? How do I forgive? And how do I deal with death? Now, no algorithm or AI can truly answer those questions for us. No political party can answer them. No TV shows or sports games can give these answers, even the World Cup. And no shopping mall can satisfy them, right? These questions require a deeper reflection and wrestling and wisdom and different life experience. And wisdom grows best in conscious community. Thich Nhat Hanh gives us another word worth sitting with called interbeing. And that means that none of us arrives here alone. We're shaped by parents, teachers, relationships, suffering, joy, and communities. And our UU values remind us that we are interdependent and a part of an interconnected web of existence. When we gather here, we honor that truth and we practice belonging to our earth, to each other, and to something larger than ourselves. And another reason for gathering each week is in our Sangha, is that it helps us live into our better or our higher selves. We encourage each other every week to grow wiser, to become more compassionate and mindful, more courageous and more committed to justice. We practice our faith by listening deeply, by serving the needs of others, and becoming more generous in a world that emphasizes consumption, greed, and superficiality. And also, our multi-generational community is rare and precious in this disconnected and stratified and lonely world. My friends, we need communities such as this to help us grow our capacity to love, to be more peaceful, and to shine our light. But I think we also gather because we need hope, right? Not optimism, hope. Optimism says, oh, everything's just going to be fine, don't worry. Hope says that whatever comes, we can face it together. Hope says love is still worth practicing. Hope says our actions matter. Hope is the practice of tending the fire until the light comes back. And that kind of hope isn't a feeling. It's a discipline. And communities like this help us practice it. Actually, in Buddhist monasteries, a bell is rung at intervals throughout the day, not to call people to action or tell the time, but to call people home to themselves, to the present moment, to pause, to breathe, and to remember what matters. So I want to invite us to think of a spiritual community like this bell. We ring each other back to what matters each week. We do so even with our chime. And we also gather because the world needs places where people learn to be fully alive. Becoming fully alive involves awakening to wonder and awe, deepening our capacity for love and presence, growing our curiosity and courage, and practicing compassion and experiencing joy. As Christy Nelson, the author of Wake Up Grateful, writes, when my eyes filled with wonder and my heart with love or joy, I do not betray my concerns for the world. I nourish my capacity to attend to them. And you said, this place brings you joy. That's what spiritual community does. It nourishes our capacity to find joy, particularly through incredible music and fun. It reminds us that beauty matters, that curiosity and wonder are vital, not as an escape from the world's suffering, but as fuel for dealing with it. And yes, we gather to find strength together, because some things are worth advocating for: religious freedom, human dignity, justice, equity, pluralism, inclusion, kindness, and the radical belief that every person possesses inherent worth and dignity, and that we are all interdependent. These values didn't emerge from nowhere. Generations before us nurtured them, protected them, expanded them. And now they are ours to carry, my friends, ours to share and grow. They are our embers to tend. Besides, where else could you find people willing to debate theology and life's meaning one moment, and then spend 20 minutes discussing whose quinoa salad is gluten-free the next? Indeed, in our UU spaces, the potluck may be one of our greatest sacraments. Right, Grinda? So why do we gather, my friends? We gather because, like every people before us who have ever circled around a fire, we know at some level, deeper than words, that we're part of something larger that began long before us and will continue long after us. We're a link in a living chain of sacred existence. But perhaps the deeper question is not actually why we gather. Perhaps the deeper question is this: what kind of community is the world longing for us to become? What kind of community does this moment in history need us to be? I believe the world is hungry for places where people can belong without conformity, where questions are welcomed, where compassion is practiced, where diversity is celebrated, where wisdom is cultivated, and people learn not merely how to succeed, but how to live fully lives that matter. My friends, I think that's our calling. Not simply to maintain an institution or preserve a building, but to tend a fire of hope, a fire of courage, a fire of justice, a fire of joy, and a fire of commitment, and you know what the closing hymn is going to be, don't you? A fire of love. So whether our fire and our faith is publicly recognized or not, we have important work to do, my friends. So dearest newest members, as well as our many longtime members here, I remind us of this gift. I'm excited for all of us to be part of this transformational community, because the measure of a congregation has never been how many people sit in the pews. The measure of a congregation is how much light it helps us spread into the world. So whether we are five people gathered faithfully in an English meeting house, or we are hundreds gathered here in Thousand Oaks, our task is the same: to tend the flame, to help one another become more loving, hope-filled, and fully alive, and to help spread the light in a world that needs it. And that, my friends, is a future worth gathering for, don't you think? May it be so.